No taxation without representation. 200 years of exploitation in the capital of this nation. No representation in the capital of this nation. 200 years of exploitation. Give the people their right to vote. Someone asked me, was it true? The voting rights of the district were long overdue.
Hello and welcome to Shadow Politics, an hour-long grassroots talk show which will attempt to shine a light on the issues that you care about. I'm your host, United States Senator Michael D. Brown, coming to you live from the District of Columbia, America's last colony. Together with my host, Maria Sanchez, we hope our show will start a dialogue with America about the issues that are important to you and affect the lives of all of us. So call in and be part of the discussion at 888-627-6008, or you can Skype questions to BBSRADIOPR. We are so excited tonight, Maria, to have with us Joe Madison. Joe Madison, who's known as the Black Eagle, is a legendary voice in radio and recognized human rights and civil rights activist. Joe started his storied career in talk radio at WXYZ-AM in Detroit. He then continued his broadcast journey to FM talk station WWBD in Philadelphia, and he moved on to Washington, D.C., where he worked both on WRC and WOL, and ultimately Sirius XM Urban View Channel, where he has a show every weekday. On his daily morning program, Joe demands action against injustice and challenges his audience with an important question: what are you going to do about it? We're so pleased to have him. And let me, before we get him on the show, also mention that in November, he was inducted into the Radio Hall of Fame. Mr. Madison, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, Senator, thank you for having me. And Maria, thank you for keeping him honest.
Which is exactly what she does. So,
no, I'm sorry. What did you say, Maria?
I said, because the senator, and I think I like his wife even more than I appreciate him.
Wait a minute. Your Senator Brown, let me tell you something.
Well, I have an aunt that says we all men marry up.
They all like our wives better. There's no ifs, ands, buts about it. So, I mean, that's because we have good taste, and hopefully our wives have good taste. It's just a thrill to be with you. And I guess what I really wanted to tell everybody who's listening is the important job that you do. You know, as a senator, I know technically it's the shadow senator, but it can sometimes be a thankless job, because I know there's no pay with it, but it is so, so important to make sure that Washington, you know, becomes the 51st state. And I just want people around the country to know that you're doing a magnificent job. And whenever you come on my show, it's just a wealth of information that a lot of people, you know, they use social media primarily to say they just didn't know. And, yes. And that's why I really was looking forward to having this time with you.
Well, thank you for that. And, you know, my big payoff, the big payoff that I get is I get to interact with people like you. And it's just, you're an amazing civil rights leader and an amazing talk show host. And I want to start by talking about your induction into the Radio Hall of Fame, because I listened to your speech, and your entire acceptance speech was thanking the people that had gotten you that far, including your lovely wife. And, you know, and I really think that's what leadership's about. I got to tell you, Joe, I think it's about supporting and moving the people around you.
Well, you know, I've been all for, you know, this holiday season. I've been sort of rethinking, what this legacy is going to be, what my responsibility is. And, you know, you use the word leadership, and I think I just decided, just in my thoughts, Senator, that, and Maria, that I'm really not a leader. I'm a follower, and I follow my conscience. As I said to a group of men at church the other day, I follow my Lord and Jesus Christ. I follow all those individuals that I mentioned in that induction because a lot of them don't get the notoriety. But, my God, I stand on their shoulders. I mean, these are folk who most people don't know, but, man, during the Civil Rights Movement, radio was extremely important. Contrary to what people see on TV with newsreels, you'd think that there was a lot of publicity. But the reality is that if it wasn't for these local radio disc jockeys, these would be people who would not only play the music of our time, but they would allow me to come in and say what was going on, what issues. It was long before there was so-called talk radio like the genre we know now. So I just felt, and especially with that group of people, that they needed to, and I'm not taking anything away from those who have been inducted into the Hall of Fame, the Ronald Reagans and the Paul Harveys, they certainly deserve their place. But there's a whole lot of folk out here who they just weren't aware of that were just as important to our society and to our country as those that were inducted that day. And when it comes to my wife, she's the executive producer of the show. She's the boss. She's the one that keeps us honest and always in my ear yelling, "Get 'em, Joe."
Well, there you go. And you need that, don't you?
but you got to give respect and you got to give credit to people who in essence you follow. I'm a follower. I am. I follow the Julian Bonds. I follow the Dr. Kings. I follow the Eleanor Holmes Norton and the Senator Browns. When you come on the show, you're leading us, and so I think, you know, we use this term leader, you know, so I think we better realize that we need to start following what we know is right, like Washington, D.C. And I got to tell you, I also wanted to say this to your audience. You know, you probably have seen this. A lot of visitors here, people who are visiting from out of town, and they're going to the museums and they're eating at our restaurants and they're watching and they're enjoying Washington, D.C. And I hope that people are listening, that they realize that we, the citizens of Washington, D.C., deserve to be a state, and we deserve to have control of our own budget, and we deserve to have senators and voting representatives. So as they're enjoying Washington, D.C., I hope they understand what you're about and what all of us need to be about, and that they go back home and tell their senators and representatives to do the right thing.
Well, may I say, as a resident of the state of California, that we have the largest by over twice, right, Michael?
Yeah, more than twice.
Signatories to the petition. How many from California?
To co-sponsors of the legislation. I think we have 44 at this point from California.
Wow.
And the next state is like New York with like 12. So
yeah.
Some they get in California that they're not getting in other places. You know, we have a caller already on line two. Yeah. She's a listener of the show, and let's have her on and see what she has to ask Joe. Anise, are you there?
I'm here.
Okay, what's your question? Comment.
Well, my question is, well, my statement, not actually a question, is to give both you and Joe Madison great praise for getting involved in the civil rights issue of D.C. statehood. We really appreciate it. You're spreading the word throughout the country, and it's very important that you, what you are doing is very important.
Well, thanks for that, Anise. We appreciate you calling in.
Well, and Denise, and that's why I tell folks, you know, if you've got relatives visiting, you know, a good friend of ours, Senator Brown, Keith Silver, he's with his nieces and nephews right now, and they're all, I think a few of them are from Atlanta. This is the discussion you want to have, because a lot of people, Denise knows this, a lot of people don't realize that we're not a state. It's amazing. And Marie, I got to say something about the state of California. Nothing, everything good comes out of California, including my wife, who was born there. So,
you know, they say what goes in California blows east, because we've done a lot
for civil rights and human rights,
which I'm really proud of.
Yeah, the you state. Should.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so Denise and others have, I mean, they are, you know, they're working hard at this.
Yes,
this,
she's a total activist.
Oh, absolutely. And I just think people need to educate themselves. And that's why we, as you probably have explained this, Senator, this is why you have a shadow senator.
Yes.
Because somebody has to lobby these members of Congress. But what really gets me, what a lot of people don't realize, can you imagine, my wife's from Los Angeles, can you imagine the city of Los Angeles and the mayor putting together their city budget and then having to have somebody from Rhode Island, who might be the chairman of a committee, to determine whether or not that budget can be spent or can be accepted? It would be unacceptable in any other any other citizen.
Yeah. And you know what? At one time, when there was a district committee that ran the district committee Congress that actually ran the city before we had home rule, it included people from Maryland and Virginia. So imagine having your neighbors deciding what you could do and couldn't do. I mean, it was just crazy. But I wanted to ask... Go ahead, Maria.
So, Mr. Madison, I have to say that I wasn't as keenly aware of exactly what it means for D.C. to not be a state until I became a co-host with the senator. And I find it insulting. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is people say, well, it's political because we don't want to give two Democrat senators to the, you know. And I'm like, I don't care. It's not fair. It's not right. So let's forget the politics and let's just talk about equality. It's my Congress member. He's like, well, our county has more citizens than the District of Columbia. So why don't you give us two senators? And I said, because we're a county in the state of California.
Right, exactly. That's not even logical.
Right.
No.
You know, to be honest, it's just an excuse. And it is political that, you know, that it used to be. When Reverend Walter Fauntroy was the congressman, he used to say, you know, the other argument they used to have, it's too Democratic, and it's too Black, and it's too liberal. Mm-hmm. And every time you turn around, there's always some political excuse. But there are formulas that can be worked out. But what it really requires is people. And you hit it, Maria. It's people need to understand is just a sense of fairness.
Right.
What we do, what we have to go through, simply to get a budget. This is our money. Oh, and I'll tell you something else. The senator probably has told you this. All these buildings that your families are visiting, these museums, the Department of Justice, the FBI building, these beautiful buildings that you see, do you know these folks do not pay local taxes?
Right.
They don't pay local taxes.
Right. Neither do the churches. And I'm not for taxing churches, but every denomination, Christian denomination that there is, has a church in Washington, D.C., for obvious reasons. So, we really don't. Universities as well. We have many, many universities. Let me ask you a question, though, that I've really wanted to ask you, Joe, because you were the former political director of the NAACP. We hear the Democrats all of a sudden. I've been involved in Democratic politics for 40 years. And one of the complaints that African Americans have had inside the Democratic Party, which is a similar complaint that D.C. residents have inside the Democratic Party, is that they're taken for granted because they always vote Democratic. So lately, we've been hearing a lot about how important the black vote is going to be in 2020. We all saw that African-Americans stayed home to some extent in 2016, and it really hurt the Democratic Party. However, we don't see any black people on the debate stage. Deval Patrick and Cory Booker did not qualify for the last debate, and Kamala Harris has dropped out. So do you think the Democratic Party is finally getting the message of how important the black vote is? Or do you think we're just talking the talk and not walking the walk?
No, I think you always have to keep it in front of their face. There's no ifs, ands, buts about it. Now, as it relates to, and it's interesting you bring that up, about who's on stage and who's not on stage, I must admit, I am not a big fan of the formula that they're using to determine who is or who is not part of the debate. I had Maria Williamson on the show not too long ago, and she pointed out something that I had not thought about, and how this is, in essence, the best debate money can buy. What she meant by that is that people have to recognize that the DNC is a business. The people who are on stage are raising and spending a hell of a lot of money. The networks are making money because they're sponsoring it, and that doesn't necessarily determine who is or is not the best candidate. I mean, look at the fact that Bloomberg is now, almost $500 million or very close to that, and he's now 5%. Cory Booker, who is a frequent guest on my show, matter of fact, most of the candidates have been on the show, and the reality is, thank goodness Corey's still in the race. But Marianne Williamson made a very interesting point, and that she just thinks that it's just too much money. If there's a color issue, the color's green, is what we need to get out of politics. To be quite candid, I'd love to go to in some countries in Europe. 90 days, you campaign, call it a day. At the end of 90 days, you can't buy any more ads, we vote. If in fact it's true, and I have been a critic, that yes, too often what happens is the Democrats wait until October to come into the black community and say, get out the vote. Now, I know that because that's when they show up on my show. Oh, we need you to really push, get out the vote. So my position has been, now's the time to start organizing. But let me add something else. I had the senator from Virginia, Mark Warner, on the show. And just before the Senate released the intelligence committee of a study they had done about Russian interference, we found out senator that the Madison show had been targeted by the Russians. And that
well,
they had actually, that, oh yeah, he, I mean, he came on the show before the study was released to let my audience know, let our audience know. And I had heard about that was a possibility, but they had targeted our show, they had targeted certain websites, and that they had used African Americans in this country that they had paid to try to persuade them not to vote, one, or certainly not to vote for Hillary. And that they are also up to the same thing in 2020. Now, this came straight from the vice chairman of the Senate Intelligence Committee to our audience. So let me tell you, clearly the black vote is extremely important. No ifs, ands, buts about it. But I think that once we get through whoever's going to be the nominee, I speak for most of my audience, anybody's better than the current president that we have. And this is what drives me crazy about the news. I'm going to tell you something. When I get back, my position is, and I'll watch my language, you know, I have a swear jar in my studio.
It's a big jar.
It's not that big.
Is there a penalty? Do you put a bucket in?
Every time I use profanity, you know, I am on SiriusXM. I put a dollar in the swear jar, and then I donate it at the end of the month to a charity like the Red Cross or the African American Museum. And they've been getting a pretty good change lately.
but swear on our program too.
Yeah.
Well, let me be mild. You know, the media does not need to report every bullshit thing the President of the United States tweets or says. This is absurd. They wouldn't do it if it were you, Senator. They wouldn't do it if it was me or Maria. This is absolutely absurd. And they're still playing the game that President Trump played when he was running. He says outlandish things. Mm-hmm. He knows he's going to get media attention. He knows that they're going to talk about it and report it. Let's give you a classic example. The 7 seconds that they took out of Home Alone 2 in order to make room for it to be on TV. Why in the hell is that news? I mean, it's when you really honestly think about it, why is it what Don Jr. says about it or what the president tweets about it, why does it have to be repeated when we know the number one issue for most of us is medical cost, the cost of hospitalization and medicine and drugs. We know that you've got states like Georgia and Alabama that, by the way, they know the black vote is important. That's why in those states, the Republican secretaries of states and the governors are trying to do what? Suppress the black vote. The Republican governor who just got elected in Florida. I worked with the organization that got, I think it was something like 80% of Floridians voted to give ex-felons the right to vote. And as soon as that governor got into office, he turned around and tried to reverse that decision. And that was directed primarily at African-American voters. So the question isn't so much who's on stage, black or white, but the real issue is, What are the issues? And that means that if it's Bernie, if it's whoever it might be, they've got to step up and address the issues that that we're concerned about. Look, Barack Obama didn't win strictly by black vote. But the reason that he was able to win was because he addressed the issues that most of us were concerned about. So whoever's on that stage, whoever the nominee is, they've got to address the interests of people that they want to vote. And I suspect that would turn out the black vote like any other vote.
Well, I I think you're absolutely right about that. We certainly saw that with Obama. We certainly saw, you know, here was a senator who hadn't even completed one term in the Senate, but he so eloquently spoke mm-hmm. to those issues that we cared about that he rose to power very quickly. I think Marie and I would
put people in his cabinet who were honest and concerned. Now let's think about this. Not one person has been has gone to prison in the 8 years that he was in office. And what's the last count for the Trump administration? I've lost count. I think it's well over 10 people that have either been indicted or found guilty or currently serving time.
And we haven't even gotten around to Rudy Giuliani quite yet. More to come, certainly. But, you know, one thing that Marie and I, we can't let you go without talking about this first, so we want to get it in early, and that is that you were involved in an event that we had last year for Dick Gregory in honor of his birthday a year after he passed. He was a local hero. You fought hard to get him a star on the Walk of Fame, and Maria was so inspired. Well, Maria, you ask the question.
Okay. Mr. Madison, I'm getting my PhD in media psychology, and I did an independent study on the life and activism of Dick Gregory, which part of that was me coming to D.C. and seeing actually two performances of Turn Me Loose, the Dick Gregory play, one-man show, basically, that you were at. And then I read his book, Nigger. I read Callous on My Soul. I read Defining Moments in Black History, Reading Between the Lies. We had his son, Dr. Christian Gregory, as a guest on our program. And I also, his personal attorney, I became friendly with her. Her name's escaping me right now. A woman who's still alive. She called him her best friend. I was moved to tears and chilled by what, talk about walking the walk, what he did for our civil rights movement and also for injustices around the world with his fasting, you know, his starving himself, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, which Dr. Christian Gregory said actually contributed to his demise. How often can you do that to yourself and not have to suffer the consequences? But can you tell me about your personal relationship with him and what he meant to you?
Oh, he was very much like a father. He had 11 children, and I always felt I was the 12th one to sort of round out his discipleship, you know. But Dick and I have been arrested, and I always tease people when I speak. I've been in some of the best jails and prisons jails in America. And I can tell you what he meant to people when we wanted that star. He should have gotten a star on the Walk of Fame 50 years ago, to be quite candid. And a lot of people don't know, you have to actually pony up, I think it's $30,000 in order to get that star placed on the Walk of Fame. And we decided on the show we're going to get it. So we applied to fill out an application. Maria, let me tell you, we had people that were sending in within two weeks, we raised over $35,000.
Oh, my gosh.
From listeners. People were sending in. Some people would send in a $5 money order. There would be executives of major corporations. I heard Dick Gregory speak when I was in college, and I head up this Fortune 500 company. We had fraternities and sororities challenging each other, truck drivers. Who are sending in money orders
and checks. In 2 weeks, they raised the $35,000 in order to get that star. And can you imagine within, what was it, a couple of years? I think he had passed away. The thing was, for him to experience it while he was alive. I can tell you that he taught me how to fast. People say, well, why are you fasting? And he said, that's why you fast. Because people will ask you, why aren't you eating? And then as soon as they ask that question, you now are in a position, Maria, listen, to educate them about the issue that you're fasting. When we would go into, we would be arrested. The last time we were together, I think it was in dealing with Darfur and the genocide in Darfur, and we demonstrated in front of the Sudan embassy. And they put us in with the general population. Well, everybody knew Dick Gregory. And we would go in, and the young men primarily would ask, and even the correction officers, well, what are you guys in here for now? And the young men in prison, in jail would ask, well, Mr. Gregory, Mr. Mel, why are y'all here? And it gave us an opportunity to educate them. So when you saw that play, I bet you what you really saw was an educator. You really saw, there's this new term people use, that they use on the social media, influencer. He was an influencer. I'm starting to use that term now. He influenced people to do things. And that's why I always ask the question in my show, after you just call up, you ask, people pontificate, they call up, they talk, yada, yada, yada. Then I always ask the question, and Senator Brown will tell you, okay, what are you going to do about it? Mm-hmm. Now, let me tell you, I never thought a simple little question like that would actually become a talking point. And the reason is because everybody can do something. And that's what Dick taught me, was that no matter who you are, I might not be able to do what Dick does or what Dick Gregory does. I might not be able to do what Senator Brown does. I might not be able to do what you do. But everybody can do something. The problem that we're having is most people don't do anything. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I've started that question, what are you going to do about it? I put it on a T-shirt just before the Thanksgiving break. So I thought, well, maybe we probably sell 300 or so, maybe 200 T-shirts. Do you know in, what was it? I think 3 weeks, we sold 4,000 T-shirts with that on the front. What are you going to do about it? And on the back of the T-shirt is Vote 2020.
Nice.
And that's really what I think we have to. We're going to have to be ready. So to point out what the question about taking the black vote for granted. Look, the reality is we can't take anything for granted. And the other thing I'm going to start talking about is we have to stop worrying about what Donald Trump is going to do. There's a history, a lesson. General Grant was the Battle of the Wilderness, I think, in Virginia. It was one of the last battles, and the generals ran into the story I read was the generals ran into Grant's tent, all frustrated because General Lee was considered a great strategist, and they were worried about they would be outflanked to the left or outflanked to the right. And he said about the only time that Grant lost his temper was when he told the general, quit worrying about what the hell Lee's going to do and get out there and do what you've got to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that's got to be our attitude come 2020. We have to stop worrying about what this nut's going to do. Look, this is a man who we know is a bona fide liar. We all know it's false. I don't have to repeat him on your show. But we keep worrying about what is he going to do next? What is he going to do next? It's not a question of what he's going to do. What are we prepared to do? And the Democratic Party needs to understand, do not wait to October to show up in the black community. You start organizing right now. Right now, you organize and be prepared to register as many folks as you can between now and the deadline, and then work at turning out the vote. One of the things I did when I was with the NAACP, we actually pre-registered high school students, high school seniors, and we pre-registered them so that by the time they graduated or they turned 18, they were already registered voters. And some schools actually handed their voter registration cards with their diploma at graduation. And this was, this must have been about 20 years ago. And this is the kind of strategies that we've got to use.
Well, we have another caller, but before we ask his question, let him ask his question, I just want to add about Dick Gregory that I'm sorry that I didn't know him very well, but I got to meet him on a half a dozen occasions, and he came to my college, my little white college, when I was in college, and slayed us. Just so I've always followed his career, and when I got to meet him, he was so gracious. He was one of the most gracious people I've ever met. He was just so kind to me, and thank you for getting that star on the Walk of Fame, because he was really an amazing person.
Him. There's not a day that goes by that I don't think of something he said when we were we were together. His humor, oh God, his humor. And can I tell you one true story? One true story. CIA, crack cocaine. You know what was going on in Los Angeles. Gary Burns and the whole CIA crack cocaine thing. So, man, I called Dick and he said, "Don't do anything. I'm flying in right now from wherever he was, and we're going to take care of this." So we started picketing. The front gate of the CIA, and they arrested the two of us. Well, let me tell you what happened. They wouldn't arrest us initially. They were just going to let us stay out there until it got dark. And Dick said, "Joe, did you get that crime tape that I asked you to get?" And it was, this is a crime scene, the yellow tape. I said, "Yeah, a friendly security guard gave me a roll. Go get it." And he said, "We're going to stretch this crime tape in front of the gate of the CIA." And then he went into his, sent somebody in his car and got a bag of flour. I'm not kidding you. Just plain white flour. And they still weren't going to arrest him. And then he took that bag of flour and sprinkled it all over the front gate of the CIA. I'm not kidding you. And they actually brought the dogs out to sniff the flower. Big looked up at me and said, "Joe, the only thing them damn dogs can make with that stuff is biscuits." and they arrested us. They arrested us, man, and took us in somewhere. Took me in a car, took him in a car, and, inside the gate, they put us somewhere, and then we met up, and they were booking us. And Dick said, "Don't say anything. Don't give them your name. Don't say anything." And they were two brothers. I never will forget these brothers, uniformed CIA officers, and they kept asking us, "What's your name? What's your Social Security?" And we just sat there like Jesus, quiet, didn't say anything, and they started laughing. Because in front of their computer was all our arrest records and his arrest records. And they turned it around and said, is this you guys? And then, it's those experiences that, you know, that they teach you a lesson, but they also teach you, here's the word we don't use with Dick Gregory enough. He had courage.
Oh, my God, yes.
Dick Gregory had courage. And I think if there's anything we need now more than anything, we need the courage to stand up to what we're dealing with this administration. And and by the way, before I forget, please say your prayers for Congressman John Lewis.
Yes, if you haven't, I just read that.
Haven't heard, because they just announced he's stage 4 cancer.
Yes.
Well, and let me just add to that, you know, since you're talking about Dick Gregory, we went by, we had an intern last year, and we took him up to Capitol Hill to do some lobbying, and we passed Lewis's office, and this kid walked in to Lewis's office and said to the receptionist, I just wanted to come in and introduce myself. I'm one of John Lewis's constituents. I'm from Atlanta, and I just wanted to, you know, if he was here, to say hello. Well, Lewis came out and took all of us into his office, and he spent 15 or 20 minutes talking to this kid and telling him how wonderful he was and learning all he could about the kid. And again, much like Gregory, he is such a gracious man. And he certainly will be in my prayers.
And again, that word courage.
And that courage. Word, you know, courage. All you have to do is see that play and realize that when he was given the opportunity to go to the mountain, you know, and be on the Jack Parr show, be on the Tonight Show, what could be more important to a stand-up comic? But he stood his ground. And right. said, I'm not going to go unless you treat me as an African-American the way you treat the white comedians and let me sit on the couch. You realize what a courageous man he actually was.
Well, my understanding is that he was asked to be a guest on the Jack Parr show about 3 times, and each time he said no. And finally, Jack Parr himself called and says, what's it going to take for you to be a guest? Why would you say no? And he said, because if I don't get to go to the couch, I'm not going to be. And he goes, done. Done.
Yeah. But
he
but
hadn't
you know
said.
What, but you know what the lesson is? The lesson is, this is what everyone needs to understand. He did not, and he said this to me, I've seen him do this 100 times. He did not need Jack Parr to validate.
Right.
He did not need Jack Parr to validate him. And let me tell you something. I have used that line so many times where people call in and say, you can't say this. You can't say that. You can't do this. I do not need you to validate me. And he was very spiritual. First of all, he's validated by God. And,
yes.
and he is validated by his action and his commitment. And that's the real lesson in that Jack Parr story, which is, by the way, very true. And that's what he said. I didn't need Jack Parr to validate me as a comedian.
Well, you know, that's also something I admire about you, is that you talk about God. And Marie and I are both people that have strong faith. And when I started working in the Democratic Party for Jimmy Carter, another man who still teaches Sunday school,
yes.
it really bothered me that somehow the Democratic Party had lost God. You know, we had given God up to Jerry Falwell and some of these other right-wing people, and all of a sudden, you know, these fundamentalist Christians who are all about the Bible have seemed to, I don't think any of them have actually read it or have actually met Jesus Christ, because they wouldn't support the kind of stuff that we see them supporting in the White House today if they were true Christians, in my opinion.
Well, that's why I got to give credit, and even though, you know, that Christian Times editorial,
Yes, absolutely.
My gosh.
I don't know if it was a revelation. I don't know if somebody threatened him. I mean, I don't know what, but I actually read that letter on air, the complete editorial on air. Because
nice.
That could have been anybody's sermon on Sunday morning or any time. Mm-hmm. So, the one thing I'm hearing from most of my friends is it's about time. It is about time.
Yeah. And so brave of them.
Yes, it was brave.
Talk about courage, right?
That's right.
Yeah. Right. But just as a side note, Mr. Madison, you may know who I was speaking of. It's Faye Williams, who was his personal counsel.
Dr. Faye Williams.
Yeah, and the national chair of the National Congress of Black Women. She used to say that he would say, "Okay, Faye, we're going to go pick it." And she goes, "What are we doing now?" And they'd go into the trunk of the car and pull out whatever poster or cause it was that they were supposed to, you know, be marching for. So she was an inspiration to me, too.
And she was at our event as well.
Yes, she was.
You know,
she actually was a wonderful lady. Yeah, the first one I saw, which is the one before ours, the night before, she was a part of a three panel where the director, the actor, and her on stage afterwards talking mm-hmm. about the production, because she was an advisor to the production as well.
Right.
Well,
right.
If we still have the caller out there, is he still on the line, Taboo? Taboo? Are you there?
Hello?
Hi, Taboo. What's your question?
Hi. I'd like for you all, if you could talk about the percentage of black, in particular Democrats, blacks who are part of the Democratic Party, as I remember, who are very dissatisfied with the... Hello?
Yeah, no
we're here. Here.
Yeah, people who are dissatisfied with the Democratic Party, and talk about two of the major things that's on our agenda.
Yeah, which are?
Well, first of all, there are a lot. You know, I get very suspicious about a caller like this. I always was told, and I'm going to be straight up with you. I've been learned, and let me say this. I've learned to listen. An old politician once told me, listen with a third ear and read with a third eye. My third ear, it amazes me. So you want me to talk about blacks who are dissatisfied with the Democratic Party? Why don't we talk about white folks who are dissatisfied with the Republican Party?
Because that's who you were speaking of earlier.
Well, we could talk about both of the parties. Let's look. I can hear a question, and my third ear is poking up. We are supposed to be dissatisfied with political parties. We talked about one of the things. If you were listening, I just got to.
Well, you say, what are you going to do about it? You know we're dissatisfied, Joe.
I just got to talking about how dissatisfied I am about the debate. I just got to talking about how I am dissatisfied about the fact that they wait until October. So what are we going to do about it? If you heard me, I think I offered about three or four solutions in that conversation just about 10 minutes ago. So I'm not going to spend another minute repeating what I said 15 minutes ago with what the Democratic Party needs to do and how they need to do it.
Well, what about the things we've been asking for how many years, the two major issues in our community that the Democratic Party won't address?
Yeah.
Reparations for one, they talk about it, and illegal immigration for how many years? That has hurt us so tremendously bad.
You sit back and tell me about the Democrats who are on the Judiciary Committee who are right now trying to address that issue. You have the entire Congressional Black Caucus that has been pushing that issue and pushing it. How fucking long have we been talking about that bill in 89? That is a troll. And I guarantee you, if he's not paid by the Russians, he should be.
Well, he's a regular listener, but
well, I'm just telling you.
Yeah,
and let me tell you, they were regular listeners. How long have we been trying to get the 51st state? And he knows damn well that there are issues. I sit up here and I look at all the things that the Democrats right now, You have 400 bills, 400 bills that are sitting on the Grim Reaper's desk over at the United States Senate that he won't even allow on the floor. And then he called up this show and asked me about the things that we haven't gotten. Reparations is at the top of the list. Hell, I knew John Conyers. We can't even get Republicans to vote to study it. So don't call up me and call you up and ask, well, how about the Democrats? You can't even get the Republicans to vote to study it.
No, so, I know. We've had Marianne Williamson on the show to talk about reparations, and we've also had a Duke professor whose name escapes me right
now.
Me
too. I know.
Who is leading the investigation on the part of the Democratic Party about what to do about reparations. So we are addressing these things, and you know, and I think you're absolutely right, Joe. That we've seen Taboo listens to our show and he calls in from time to time. He's a definite Trump supporter. So,
and I'm telling you, watch those. Let me tell you, those are the calls that we got last September. The election in 2018. Those were the exact calls, the type of calls that we
interesting
got went from Labor Day all the way up to the election. Those exact same type of calls, and I kept saying, what are they trying to do? What they do is they plant this seed of doubt. Now, again, if not the Democratic Party, then you either stay home or you vote for the Republican president. And that's what they're attempting to do with the audience. And that's why I said, learn to listen with a third ear and read with a third eye.
I've never heard that before, and I like it a lot.
And I can't imagine someone who's got a better third ear than Joe Madison. I listen to your show all the time, and people call in, and you know, when it comes to being courageous, Mr. Madison, I think you're right there at the top of the list. So thank you so much for your courage, and thank you so much for all you do to get people to think about what they can do. What are they going
to
do?
The call to action.
And let me just say, because we're about to run out of time here, is there anything that you want to say that we haven't talked about tonight? We want to give you an opportunity. First of all, all our listeners, you need to go to SiriusXM and listen to the Joe Madison Show. It'll make a better advocate out of you, believe me. But is there
JoeMadison.com?
The only thing I would say is number one, you know, don't fall for that. You know, in politics, we know there are no permanent friends or permanent enemies. As William Clay, the former congressman, wrote a book, there's permanent interest. And the interests are, we have a multitude of interests. But I leave with the question, what are you going to do about it? He had some nerve to ask you on your show and ask me and Maria, what are we going to do about it? What do you think we've been doing for the last hour? We've been trying to influence people. We've talked about what we've been doing. Talk about what you've been doing, Senator, without a dime of pay, hardly a budget. This is what we're doing. Everybody can do something. So I would say to that caller, what the hell are you doing about?
There you go. And on that note, we thank you all for listening. We thank Joe Madison. We encourage you to listen to the Joe Madison Show on every morning on SiriusXM. Thank you so much for being with us. We leave you with a song. We always do a song at the end of the show. And this is in honor of Mr. Madison and all the activists out there that work hard every day to make America a better place. This is the Morehouse Glee Club with my favorite rendition of We Shall Overcome. Maria, last word's yours.
We always want to thank our listeners for making time out of your very busy days to include our broadcast of Shadow Politics into your listening, and we wish you a very happy new year. Thank you.
Give the people their right to vote.